Welcome to the Iron Basketball Podcast, the Pick and Troll Podcast. I'm your host, Zach Harper. With me today of SBNation.com, Paul Flannery, Professor Paul Flannery. How's it going?
Occasional Paul Flannery.
Yeah, I'm not teaching this year, but that's a boring story that we don't need to get into.
It's like you and Andre Miller, the two professors of the NBA. That's what I like to think.
We talked about that in the locker room. I introduced myself to Andre Miller, and I said, "You're known as the professor. I am sometimes a professor." And he was like, "That's great."
Awesome. Was he not into that?
Nah, he's a really cool guy. I'm sure you've talked to him.
Yeah.
So we talked, but like, yeah, that was not the great icebreaker that I expected today.
My favorite thing about Andre Miller is just that every city he visits, he seems to go into the media dining. So I think he's just pocketing per diem as like the ultimate veteran move.
That dude was old school before, like even when he was a rookie.
Yeah. He was just like, he's always been a veteran. Yeah, he kind of reminds me of like just that Sam Cassell mold of point guard where it's just like, he's always been a 15-year veteran in the league, no matter where,
right.
No matter when it's been.
No, and I love guys like that. I really do. And I talk to those guys a lot, like the Andre Millers. Drew Gooden, you don't even think of Drew Gooden as a vet. Drew Gooden's kind of awesome to talk to about this stuff. They've got great perspective on the league because they really see it for what it is at this point. And they've got nothing to hide, and they've got nothing really to play for in some instances, you know, except for the next contract. So I love those guys. They're great.
Those guys really are the best to talk to. You've talked to some pretty – I'm really bad at segues. So you've talked to some – really important players over your time covering the Boston Celtics.
Some of them even talked back.
My favorite stories of yours are Kevin Garnett stories. Can you share one with us that is podcastable?
Oh yeah, sure. So I love KG to deal with. I'm like the only one who does. But for whatever reason, we always had like a decent rhythm to things. I don't know if he knows my name or could pick me out of a lineup, but we always had a pretty good rhythm. And one day we were at a practice. It was a Saturday afternoon, kind of early in the season. There's nobody there except for a couple of beat writers. And randomly KG was like, "Sure, I'll talk." And I was the only one around. So I didn't have anything to ask him because there was nothing happening at that point.
Mm-hmm.
So, but I'm like, I got KG. I got to ask him something. So I asked him about some stupid question about Celtic pride, right? I know. And he looks at me and he's like, "Well, you're a writer, man." And he gave me, and this is somewhere on the internet. He gave me this huge long answer basically saying like, if you're like a writer and you stumble upon a desk and it's Beverly Cleary's desk. I'm like, who the hell is Beverly Cleary? I didn't have a child at this point, so like the Ramona and Beezus thing kind of like went over my head.
Sure.
But he was like, and if you sat down at that desk that Beverly Cleary wrote at, you would feel inspiration if you got any kind of a soul. Like all this stuff, it was the most ridiculous answer I've ever had in my entire life. But I think he was kind of giving me respect, like,
right.
Like you're a writer, like you'll get this. And so that to me, I was like, all right, Kevin, thanks, buddy. And that was it.
He's great. He just came out. It was weird because a couple of weeks ago, you know, Sam Mitchell's been under fire with the Timberwolves because he's not doing a great job coaching the Timberwolves, and he's quite difficult to deal with. So I think you should kind of separate his personality from the coaching aspect, at least with how he presents the media. And I've had some difficult run-ins with him over the last year. But even I try to, like, separate myself. But KG, a couple of weeks ago, had a chance to back Sam Mitchell, kind of like, you know, prop him up a little bit, and he didn't take the opportunity, just kind of like, next question. And then this week he comes out and like supports him and says like, you know, you don't see the development that's going on, really kind of back Sam Mitchell. I thought it was weird that he didn't back Sam Mitchell then because he is such a loyal guy and Sam's like his guy, you know, but then to come out, it was much more of a KG type moment.
Yeah, and so I wasn't there, so you know,
right.
So this is my from afar perspective. I bet that when he said next question, that was his way of backing him up, as if to say, this is a ridiculous assertion and it's so dumb. Excuse me, I'm not even going to dignify it with an answer. Next
right.
question, this is stupid. So then, and like KG is one of those weird guys that you know they all say they don't read stuff. I don't think he does necessarily anymore, anyway, and he probably found out later, like, oh, this caused a kerfuffle. So he took it upon himself on the road, which is a very KG move, only talk to – because, you know, why is he going to – you know, he's just going to deal with the handful of people that are traveling.
Right.
And, you know, and then back Sam Mitchell up. So that was my take from afar, was that I don't think that he declined the opportunity to back up Sam. I think that he – and just a guess, he was basically saying, this is so dumb, I'm not even going to deal with it.
Yeah, that makes sense. You got to see a little bit of him and Rasheed Wallace together on the same team, right?
Sorta.
Was Was the Rasheed Wallace era everything you hoped it would be?
No, it was not. The Rasheed Wallace era was very difficult. He did not come to. He was not in great shape, and he did not play well that year at all. And it became very difficult for everyone. And then toward the end of the season, Rasheed started playing well in the playoffs.
Yeah.
And I mean, there was a moment. I forget who reported this. All these things blend together, but basically, like KG, like grabbed him in the shower and read him the riot act and was like, "We need you," and all this kind of stuff with a few 12th and 6-letter words. But you know, Rasheed was definitely like he was his own guy, and he wasn't really part of that crew, and you know, but like I love talking to him. He had so many phenomenal quotes, and was so much fun to talk to that I enjoyed having him around. But yeah, that was it, man. Like they had high expectations for this, and it didn't work. He only lasted 1 year. I forget how many years he signed for, but it was a lot.
Yeah, and then he went to New York after that, I think, and had like a little bit of a revival, but not really. He like took Kurt Thomas's role on the team or something like that.
Full year, by the way. There was a year in between, and I was still covering the team, and I was on the radio a lot then. And I mean, every time I was on the radio, somebody would call and be like, "I saw Sheed, you know, downtown. I think he's coming back." And he was hanging around.
Yeah.
He just wasn't
coming back. So today's Boston Celtics team just confuses the hell out of me. Like, I know Brad Stevens is a great coach, and he's extracting everything he can out of what I've described as, like, this Celtics team is like watching an Ocean's 11 movie, except all 11 guys are Scott Kahn. Like, that's what it, like, they're...
That one, Zach.
But it's like, everyone's fine. Like, you have some real talent on the team, like Avery Bradley, Isaiah Thomas. Like, you have some talent on the team, but no one you would consider, like, a one or two guy. And yet, they're very good because Brad Stevens is good. I don't know what it is, but I can't wrap my head around why they're good.
Okay, so I tried to tackle this very issue about 6 weeks ago in a Sunday shoot-around piece. And I just happened to be, courtside early when people were warming up, and I saw Brad, and we were talking. And I said, you know, I don't know if I can figure your team out. He looked at me kind of quizzically, and he said, really, we're not that difficult. And to him, it's very simple. They have 9 or 10 good players. Yeah. I think we call them good players who would be fine in anybody's rotation. And not every team has 9 or 10 good rotation players. Sometimes they're getting away with, you know, a guy who probably shouldn't be playing as many minutes, etc. So they don't have as many huge letdowns in terms of talent level when they go to the bench. In fact, they're even better when they go to the bench in a lot of instances. They don't have the top end talent, as you noted, which means, I don't know what their record is in close games right now, but it's not, I don't think it's great.
Yeah.
And even just, you know, from the eye test, whether they're, you call them a close game or not, I've watched them play like Indiana where Paul George took over the game. They don't have Paul George. And they've beaten Indiana where they swarmed Paul George. They can do that, but they don't have that guy who can take you home in those instances. That is what separates them from being, you know, a decent team and being a great team. They're just a good team.
Right.
My contention, and I get some flack for this on Twitter whenever I bring it up, is that I think they've kind of underachieved this first half of the season, because if you look at their differential, you know, they should have a better record. And then you really examine their schedule. They lost twice to Brooklyn. They lost once to the Lakers at home. They lost, you know, they got killed by Orlando once. They blew a lead against Orlando, blew a lead against Memphis. They've blown leads here and there. So you can say, they're a gritty, gutty team that's won 28 games. Good for them. But I can also say they probably should win 30. They should have 32.
Yep.
So when you say you don't understand them, my question to you is, what is it you don't understand about them? Because you can go in 700 different ways with this team. They're very strange.
Right. Well, I guess for me, it's accepting the talent. Like, I think Isaiah Thomas is good, but I struggle to see how much impact he has outside of the offense. Like, obviously, offensive player, but his size and his defense really throw me for a loop, and which is weird because, you know me, I'm like all about the offensive gunners who don't really do a lot on the other end. But for whatever reason, like him as the top guy on that team or top scorer on that team, it throws me off. I actually think Avery Bradley kind of deserved the All-Star nod over him. I think the world of Avery Bradley this year. I think he's been, you know, pretty brilliant on defense and really good on offense for what he's asked to do. And I think it's just like, it's accepting the Jared Sullingers, the Kelly Olynyks, the You know, I like Jonas Drebko, you know, Amir Johnson. Like, I like those guys, but it's figuring out, like, can you really make a real rotation out of all these guys? But, like, you know, you say the depth of a 10-man rotation, like, it does make sense. Like, having that depth is not something everyone else has. And so when you can have that depth every night, you know, you can stay in a lot of games just because there's no real letdown.
Right. And their defense presents a problem, especially during the regular season, because they're very active. They're very aggressive. Yeah. They get tons of steals. They turn people. Every team that comes into Boston, that's the first thing everybody mentions is we got to protect the ball. We can't have turnovers. And then they turn it over 20 times. But, you know, it's situational, too. And this is where I think Brad Stevens really excels as a coach, is that he puts these guys in positions where they can succeed given their talents. Take Evan Turner, right? Mm-hmm. Evan Turner was basically on his way, you know, toward the bottom of the league after the Indiana experience that went south on him. And not his fault, by the way. And so he right. comes to Boston. So what can Evan Turner do? Well, Evan Turner is a big guard who can post up on the baseline. That's not really a skill that translates all that well in the modern NBA, but, you know, as a second team guy, he can post up dudes, and he can score, and he can help you maintain an offensive flow when things get ragged. And he's a pretty good passer, and he's a pretty good rebounder. Is he great at any of those things? No, but, you know, as a third or fourth option off the second unit, that's not bad. Jay Crowder just needed a chance to play, yeah. And it turns out that he's a workout beast, and he really has worked hard on his game.
I like Jay Crowder a lot. He's
everybody
really good.
Loves yeah. Jay. He's great. And, you know, and you mentioned Avery Bradley. There's another guy that, he's worked really hard. So yeah. They've got a bunch of guys that are good guys that work hard, play hard. Brad's put them in positions. And so when those guys get in positions to succeed, you know, they're happy. And a happy player is often a productive player.
Yeah, that's a really good point. And I guess, I don't know, with Brad Stevens, like, did they expect him to be this good of a coach? I mean, maybe that's a stupid question, but did they expect, like, I think he's exceeded expectations, even if you thought he would succeed in the NBA level. And also, because they have all these young guys, they seem to be progressing, how much of that is him, and how much of that, you know, how much credit deserves to go to the development staff as well?
All of it. I think yeah. It's all connected. And I think that, yeah, they did expect him to be a really good coach. That's why they gave him a ridiculous, what was it
yeah.
like?
It's like 6 years.
Seven, 6 year contract?
Yeah, 6 year, $36 million or something like that.
I remember asking somebody, I'm like, does anybody else in the NBA have a 6 year contract? And they're like, maybe Pop.
Right.
Nobody knows what Pop's contract is. So, yeah, they absolutely knew that. And, you know, there were a lot of teams that wanted to hire Brad Stevens,
yeah.
by the way. There were at least three or four that pop into my head at the moment that wanted to hire him. So, the first year, his coaching, you know, there was a definite learning curve, and he'll tell you. I mean, they won 25 games that year, which is not really that indicative, but, you know, it took him a while to figure out that, in you know, the NBA is an 82-game season.
Sure.
You know, it's different than college. There's not as much practice time. You can't game plan game to game necessarily the way you can in college. And, you know, so there was an adjustment period for him. I think that he's really started to figure it out. He's very smart. The thing about Brad is that, and I've talked to him a lot about this, he really, you know, everybody talks about the process. He really believes it. And it's boring. It's boring to talk about the process. But he is really into that stuff. And the notion that you don't get too high, you don't get too low, you know, sometimes early on people wanted him, you know, like reporters here are smart. They've been around for a while, and they're kind of like baiting him to rip the team like Doc used to do on occasion. And he's never done it. You know, occasionally he might get a little agitated. You know, that's as angry as we've ever seen Brad Stevens. It's like, it's not that angry.
Yeah.
But he also doesn't, you know, doesn't get too excited about guys. And I think the players like that about him, and it's taken him a while to figure it out. But I think the players are so used to having coaches that are just all over the map that they appreciate a guy who is that steady with them and, you know, doesn't BS them, basically.
Yeah, it reminds me a little bit of dealing with Quinn Snyder this season. He's another guy that kind of doesn't get too high, doesn't get too low, and I think, you know, a young team can be hungry for that, you know, that reaffirmment of like, hey, you guys are doing a really good job, like keep it up,
right.
we're going the right direction. And like a little win streak is not going to affect Quinn Snyder because he realizes the process and the journey and the length of everything. And so, you know, that can maybe be a little frustrating for guys. But at the same time, when Rodney Hood sucks for three games and Quinn's like, hey, don't worry about it, just go out there and play and do what we ask you to do, and then he turns it on for a month, I think that also, you know, that plays into it of like, you didn't, you know, shower us with praise when we were winning, but you're not killing us either. Like, you're saying, let's keep building habits. And I think,
right,
you know, that translates even more with Brad Stevens.
It does. And I wrote about this early in the year. People can look it up if they're interested. But there's a way of thinking that has really influenced him. And it's called, I think it's called mindset. I might get this wrong. But it's taken a lot of currency in education systems as well. It's praise versus building good habits, basically. And so if you just praise a child for doing well and praise their intelligence, then they're going to think that intelligence or talent is the only thing that is making them successful. Whereas if you reinforce the notion that it takes hard work, that then builds really good hard work habits. And it's an interesting phenomenon, and if you ever have kids, Zach, you'll probably think about this stuff a lot more than you do now. But that really that really influences him as a coach. He'll tell you also as a person and as a parent. And so the praise thing, he's not going to go out of his way to praise people.
Yeah.
He's going to talk about the hard work element, and it's a really interesting concept. He really believes in this stuff, and that really reinforces his. I mean, once you understand that, then you really understand a lot about how Brad Stevens operates.
I've always wondered if he would be, because, all right, this doesn't really relate to the NBA, but when I was coaching with Jimmy Spencer, who I think you know as well, we coached high school basketball, JV basketball together, and he was the head coach, I was the assistant, and he would do this thing where after good stretches in a game, he would call timeout instead of like the bad stretches, and it was kind of like this positive reinforcement thing. I've always wondered why more coaches in the NBA don't do that. I think like someone like Brad Stevens with that kind of mentality that you're talking about, maybe it works in to that idea of like, hey, we just went on an 8-0 run. This isn't breaking momentum. This is reinforcing why we're doing this. I've always wondered why that coaching strategy doesn't translate into the higher levels.
Well, that's interesting. I think it's mainly because coaches are generally afraid of everything.
Sure.
Yeah, I mean, coaches are very conservative by nature, and I think the really, really good coaches are not, you know, and that really stands out. The really good coaches are not afraid. They're not afraid to experiment. They're not afraid to try something, even when things are going well. And they're also smart enough to know when they're screwing something up. I think – he hates hearing this. Brad hates hearing this, by the way. He hates hearing that he's the most important element of this equation and he's the star. He absolutely hates it, which also plays well in the locker room because, you know,
there's some coaches who don't feel that way.
Exactly right. So, yeah, no, I mean, I think he's been very, very good. And I don't see him going anywhere, by the way. There's going to be college stuff happening year after year, and I don't see him going anywhere for a while.
With the Celtics, like, kind of, I guess the next move is, you know, where do they go get that star? You know, there are rumors of Kevin Love. I guess now there are trade rumors about them trying to get Dwight Howard, which didn't make a ton of sense to me in 2016. Like, what kind of stock do you put into that situation?
Okay, so as we talk, there's about like 2 weeks left between now and the trade deadline, right?
Right.
I would assume that the Celtics will be brought up in just about every single player's name. And there's a couple of reasons for that. One is that they make a lot of calls.
Yeah.
And they talk about every single player. And they're willing to explore ideas. And they're willing to say, hey, all right, you guys want to get rid of Dwight? What's it going to take? Because maybe you might get like a situation like last year where you get a player like Isaiah Thomas for basically free.
Yeah.
And did that make sense at the time? Kinda, sorta.
It worked out.
Really, it did work out.
Yeah.
It did work out. There were some people in the organization who were a little more in line with, hey, let's just bottom out and get another lottery pick.
Yeah.
You could say that would have worked out better. I don't know. But so I think, you know, so Dwight Howard, no, it doesn't shock me. I don't think that they're like, we got to get Dwight Howard in here.
Right.
Like, it's not that. People need to – it's amazing to me, Zach, how many years have we gone through – internet rumors, you know, around the trade deadline. I mean,
yeah.
You know, we're talking like 10, 15 years of experience in doing this at this point. It's like, yes, people talk to each other. Sometimes names get brought up. It doesn't mean they're bringing in the guy, and it doesn't mean they're trading them, you know, the Brooklyn draft pick to get him. They're not doing that. If they do, I'll rip. Like, it's, they're doing their due diligence, and their name is going to get tossed in with just about every single player that may or may not be available between now and the trade deadline, because they are actively trying to make their team better right now.
Yeah, and that, well, that's the funny thing to me too, is one, like, any talk Daryl Morey has ends up in the media. And that's by design. Like, you're always the active, you know, GM, active decision maker trying to make moves, and that puts pressure on maybe other moves to get made, so that you don't get scooped or whatever. Like, Daryl Morey is very good at you know, having his name be in those conversations throughout the media. Also, I always ask someone when they say, hey, is this rumor? You know, what? Why would they possibly do this? My answer is always, why did it leak out? Who does it benefit? Like, who? Mm-hmm. Like, you know, there's a science behind all this, which I think you and I have, you know, learned pretty decently by now, is like, stuff doesn't leak out unless people want it to leak out, for the most part. Like, maybe there's a 5% chance there, but, you know, with the Dwight Howard thing leaking out, does that benefit Boston to say, like, hey, by the way, we may be going after this guy, so, you know, let's build up a market that ups the value that we have to give up? Or does it benefit Houston to say, like, hey, by the way, this guy might be available, give us your assets?
Right. I mean, you know, and you got to remember too, you got to remember relationships in these kinds of things. Daryl Morey used to work for the Celtics.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, so you got to remember all this stuff. But, like, you know, would you trade, if you're the Celtics, would you trade David Lee's contract and, like, one of your stash of picks that didn't involve Brooklyn?
Right.
Or Dwight Howard? Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, that's pretty good value. Better. Right.
Okay, next.
And like, even, I mean, even if you think Dwight's going to opt out, you still have his bird rights. Like, you still have the upper hand in controlling, not controlling his destiny, but you have the upper hand in his destiny, right?
And you reinforce the idea that you're a serious franchise willing to make serious, bold decisions.
Yeah.
You know, all these things play together. They all play.
What do you think? What do you think Danny Ainge's plan is? Is it just doing due diligence and trying to get into the conversation with the superstar?
And so, you know, trying to get inside Danny's brain is not an easy task, and I mean that. Like, he's a pretty sharp guy.
Yeah,
and he's got a lot of things going on at once. They, you know, look, they want to get a superstar. I don't know if any of those guys are available right now.
Yeah.
Who do you think is the best player available right now? I don't think it's anybody in the top 10. I don't think it's Blake Griffin. I don't think it's Kevin Love. I don't think it's DeMarcus Cousins.
Maybe Al Horford?
Maybe.
Maybe Al Horford?
Now, Al Horford, to me, makes a lot of sense for the Celtics.
That's a very good idea by the Celtics, if you can do that.
That would be a great idea. Yeah. And I think, honestly, I mean, I don't think that would, like, necessarily put him over the top and get him into the finals, but I think that would put him over the top and get him into the, you know, maybe get into a conference final situation.
Yeah, I mean, I think they become the second-best team, depending on what they have to give up, but I don't think they would have to give up so much that it doesn't even out in their favor.
Well, that's why you have, you know, 10 rotation guys, plus contracts, plus draft picks.
Yeah.
There's a lot, relatively speaking, and then there's, you know, you got all this stuff. Might as well start using them. So yeah, I mean, they want to make a deal. They've wanted to make a deal for the last 2.5 years, and they haven't been able to do it. And, you know, part of that is that teams just don't, you know, they back away. I mean, look, they went all in to get Justice Winslow during the
season.
And for whatever reason, Charlotte didn't take it. And that'll be interesting to look at in 4 or 5 years. You know, they went, you know this, with the Kevin Love saga. They were in on Kevin Love from the beginning.
Yeah.
And you know, if Cleveland doesn't get Andrew Wiggins and make him available, I don't know they would have traded him to Boston, but there wasn't a better offer out there for them, as far as I knew.
Yeah, because I don't think they, like, Klay Thompson wasn't on the table. So,
right.
So, I mean, it, like, maybe you can say, I don't know, Harrison Barnes could be that guy, but I don't know that I believe that. And right. With the amount of, like, if you're just getting asset acquisitions to reset your franchise, the Boston package may have been the best one.
Right, and it has been. And the problem is they just haven't been able to find anybody to take it. And, you know, I mean, if you go back and look at Danny's history, the KG Ray Allen series of maneuvers, which they're basically trying to replicate that.
Yeah.
You know, that took 5 years.
Yeah.
5 years. So they can be, you know, they're patient. They're patient enough, let's say. This is one thing that I've appreciated about them. They want to compete. Danny hates not winning. He is one of those guys. He is very, very, very competitive at everything he does. And so they did not want to spend years in purgatory in the lottery. They wanted to compete. They think that's important. They think that's important in building a culture and all those kinds of things that we roll our eyes at, but they think it's important. And so, you know, that's their mindset. They want to get better and they want to win now.
Yeah, I mean, it makes sense, like, especially when Daryl Morey came from the organization, you see what he did with Houston. Like, they were always, like, kind of that treadmill team, but they were acquiring assets. And then they're able to make the move for James Harden. So I guess with Danny Ainge, like, you'd still keep that culture going with Brad Stevens and the Celtics lore and all that stuff. But then once you get that James Harden, then it just booms for you, right?
Right. And so, I mean, the question is, you know, don't make a bad move while you're trying to make a good move. Right.
Right.
Don't blow your stock on a guy who's not going to be the guy to take you over the top. I mean, when they went after KG, that was a no brainer to them. They wanted that for years.
Yeah.
You know, I don't know that there is no brainer out there right now. You know, I mean, we're years away from Anthony Davis being remotely available.
Right.
You know, we're years from any of these guys being remotely
Cousins
available.
Cousins is like through 2018, right, or something like that. And even then,
I'm not even sure that Cousins how hot they are for him.
Is it the attitude thing you would guess, or
I think it's divided in their decision making.
Yeah,
you know, I think there are some people who are and some people who aren't. But yeah, I mean, like, the attitude doesn't help necessarily. The talent is there; they love the talent, you know. But like, any team that would be interested in DeMarcus Cousins has to ask themselves, how would he play in their market?
Yeah, I mean, it is. You know, I think I believe in him. Like, I think he's great. I think he can lead a team. I think, while he hasn't helped the situation, I think the situation has been chaotic around him.
Sure.
And I think that's hard to navigate as a young star with expectations, and especially when you have all that turnover that that organization has had since he was drafted by the Maloofs and Jeff Petrie. You know, that's a tough thing to figure out, you know, as you're maturing and all that stuff. And he didn't maybe have the right mindset to begin with. But I still think that even though I believe in him, I don't think he works in every situation.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's fair, and I think what you just said is fair, very, very fair. You know, and then, like, it's unfair to do this, Zach, but, you know, like, if you compare his situation to what KG went through in Minnesota, they were better, obviously,
right.
But that wasn't exactly a stable organization.
No, not at all.
You know, but through it all, did anyone think, man, you know, KG doesn't care about winning, or, you know, this, that? No,
you knew that was the most important thing to him.
Yes. And so, anyway, I mean, so where is that superstar going to come from? It may come from the draft.
Yeah, I mean, that Brooklyn pick. I don't know how you get that deal done without any protections. That's amazing.
I don't know.
That's really incredible. Like, maybe Danny Ainge just is that good. You know, I've criticized his you know, quote unquote rebuild or retool plan, or however you want to phrase it, just because I never thought he was getting necessarily maximum value outside of that trade, but that trade maybe sets you up, and it doesn't, and you can be a little more conservative with everything, and he has stockpile assets and picks and everything.
Yeah, and that's the thing, like, you don't have to tank, because you can just let somebody else do it for you.
Right. You know? That's the brilliant thing. You keep getting that playoff revenue and someone else tanks for you. That's incredible.
It is totally brilliant. And, you know, I mean, they're probably going to get the Dallas pick they have this year.
Yeah.
It's top seven protected. You know, it's probably going to be in the middle of the first round. It's not great. It's not terrible. They've got a Memphis pick a couple of years down the line. How long is Memphis going to be good for? I don't know. So they've got a lot of stuff.
Yeah. Speaking of good teams, the Golden State Warriors, you were just around them recently.
Yeah. They're good. They're just kind of good.
Yeah, no, they're pretty decent. I'm blown away by the circus, I don't know, like, I get the backlash to them. I get some people don't buy the attitude. I think that's just a natural thing. I think, you know, if Twitter was around when Jordan was dominating in the mid-90s, I think there would have been backlash to that as well. But I just don't get how you watch that team and you're not dazzled. Like, they're so much fun.
Oh, absolutely. And, you know, I mean, like, the test is, can you show a Warriors game to somebody who does not obsess about the NBA like we do? And what is their first reaction going to be? Like, every once in a while, my wife will watch some basketball with me. She used to do this more, but now she doesn't do it as much as she used to. And, like, if the Warriors come on, we'll watch. And she'll start laughing. You know, she'll start laughing at, like, Steph pulling up from 35 feet or they're passing or something like that. Because it's fun.
Yeah.
They're a fun team to watch. I get the idea of the backlash, but I don't necessarily – I kind of think the backlash is a little misdirected at this point.
Yeah.
Because to me, the Warriors are still kind of this randomly overachieving, good story team, as far as I'm concerned.
What do you mean? Just the way they've been put together, the way the personalities work, or
Yeah, all of it.
Yeah.
All of it. I mean, you know, like, nobody thought Steph was going to become the best player in the NBA.
No.
Let alone the greatest shooter who ever lived, which he probably is. No one thought Draymond was going to become an all-star. No one thought, you know, Klay Thompson was going to become a top 20, top 25 all-NBA kind of talent.
Yeah.
Here comes the train, by the way.
Sure. Right on time.
You know, I mean, Sean Livingston, Leandro Barbosa. You can go
most
Brandon fates. Rush.
Yeah, Brandon Rush.
You know, and it helps from the standpoint, from the media standpoint, that Steve Kerr is accessible and a great quote and really, really good to talk to. And he helps tell their story really, really, really well. But, you know, to me, they're fun. They're fun, and their crowd is great. The arena is great. Oracle is fantastic. It's an old school arena. It's an old school crowd. Maybe when they move to San Francisco, it'll be like, ugh, really? Again with these guys? To me, it kind of reminds me of the first run of the Bulls when they were playing in the old Chicago Stadium.
Yeah.
It was like, that crowd was awesome, right? And then when United Center is like, that's still a good crowd, but it's nowhere near what the old place used to be. Maybe that'll be something like that.
Do you think it's a mistake to move to San? I mean, obviously money wise, it's a brilliant move, but do you think it'll lose some of the crowd luster? Like,
probably.
Yeah.
Probably. I mean, that's usually the way these things work, right?
Right.
I mean, is it a mistake? Probably not. You know, I mean, these are for profit entities. Will they lose a bit of their thing? Yeah, probably. I mean, you know, for a long time, the Celtics had this problem because they, you know, they moved the garden, like, whatever it was, like 100 feet. But they rebuilt it. And the new garden, have you been to the garden?
I went to a Magic Celtics game in, like, 2009 to see Dwight Howard versus KG.
Okay.
Yeah.
And was this the Paint Your Face Clown game or not?
No, it was not that game, unfortunately. I wish it was.
May have been. Yeah. I just didn't know that. Yeah, so it's not a great building.
Yeah.
It's a hockey arena.
Yeah.
And does it have the same intimacy as the Boston Garden? No. But you saw what happened when the Celtics got good again. Those crowds were awesome.
Yeah.
They were fantastic. And those crowds have stayed pretty good. So if you have a good team, your chances are you're going to have a good crowd. But are you going to have the same kind of level of intimacy, the same kind of just community feel that you have at Oracle? Probably not. No. I mean, they're two different cities.
Right, it's very two different cities.
Completely different cities.
Different areas. I mean, there's a safety concern when you go through that part of Oakland on the BART system. Like that.
I took it several times.
Yeah, it's not the most comfortable feeling. With going down the Embarcadero in San Francisco, like, going to be quite a bit different.
A little bit. Yeah.
A little bit. Quite a bit different. Maybe it's not so shocking to you because you've been around the Celtics, who are a very, very professional organization, but anytime I'm around the Warriors, I'm blown away by how professional that organization is, just top to bottom. Like, everything just seems top of the line, top service, like the way they cater to the media in certain respects, the way just everything runs. And maybe that's because my first team covering was the end of the Maloof era Kings, and then I went to Minnesota. Like, I haven't had the most professional organizations as I've come up. But I don't know, do you get that same sense that they are that franchise?
Yeah, I think that's all that stuff helps in the aggregate, right?
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know if it helps win a championship or anything like that. But I think, you know, if you have expectations as a franchise and you're run well from the top to the bottom to the middle, which a lot of teams forget about, then, yeah, chances are you're just going to have a different kind of attitude. If everything's first class, players are going to feel like they're being treated like, you know, grown-ups in a first-class environment. That helps. I mean, we've all worked a lot of different places, right? Like, sometimes you work at a place and you kind of put up with the environment because it's what you have and you try to make the best of it. And sometimes you work at a place and you never want to leave. You never want to go home.
Right.
I think that's kind of, that's a little bit what they have. I mean, I was there for a practice and, you know, I actually hung out so long that they kicked me out.
Sure.
And the media relations people are great, but
yeah,
they were like, you got to go now. You know? But I was there for several hours, and there were still players there, and I went up talking to a bunch of people for a story that I'm going to do in a couple weeks. And, you know, and then there were some support staff getting together for like a 3-on-3 game, like 3 hours after practice.
Right.
I mean,
well, you were there for a long time.
I was there for a long time. And like, they just didn't, you know, like, I think that's kind of an indicator if people like their jobs, if they're not in a rush to go home when the day's over.
Yeah, I was, I guess maybe a month and a half or 2 months ago, they were in town, and I went to shoot around, and then after that, I had to, like, I don't know, throw up some post or something. And so, like, I'm on Basketball Reference making sure I have my facts straight with something. It didn't have anything to do with them. And Raven Ritter, their mm-hmm. NPR guy, like, walks by. He's like, "So you're on Basketball Reference. What stat do you need? I can give you a stat." I was like, "No, this isn't about you guys." He's like, "Ah, I might have the stat anyway." Like, it was just that kind of, like, personable nature that was pretty fun.
Yeah, no, they're great. They're really great. It's a great PR staff. They usually win the Basketball Writers Awards for that. And yeah, I mean, you know, coming up with the Celtics, covering the Celtics, like Jeff Twist has been doing this since the Birds. Like, you won't find a more professional outfit than the one the Celtics have. So, yeah, I guess I've been lucky in that regard. It makes it easier. That's for sure.
With the Warriors, is it a foregone conclusion they're going to win a title? I mean, Matt Moore and I have been talking about that for 2 months of just like, nah, they're probably going to win the title. I know you have to respect the Spurs and maybe the Thunder, maybe the Cavs, but this team does seem kind of unbeatable, right?
I don't think it's a foregone conclusion. I think San Antonio is really good.
Yeah.
They will never play that badly, and Golden State may never play that well again, and presumably they'll have Duncan, although we don't know that for a fact.
Right.
I would make Golden State the favorite, absolutely, especially if they have home court. And if I'm them, I would prefer to not play Oklahoma City in the second round. Yeah. I think that would be a good idea to not have to deal with that team. So I don't think it's a foregone conclusion necessarily. I mean, you know, look, 2009, Celtics were defending champs. They were better than they were in 2008.
Yeah.
They were killing teams. And then right around now, they were out in Utah, and I went out to get a drink of water, was watching a game on TV, and I came back, and KG was holding his knee, and that was the end.
Yeah.
That was it. You know, things happen. All those people will tell you the 2019 was better than 2018.
I agree.
And they probably won back-to-back championships that year.
Yeah.
That said, you just don't know. You just don't know what you're going to have. Come April. We've seen a change way too many times to start anointing some team. Are they the best team? Yes, obviously. They may be one of the best teams of all time. But I'm not ready to do that, no.
Do you think if... Like, let's say Klay Thompson goes down with an injury and they don't get to be their full strength in the playoffs and they lose a series, do you think Doc Rivers will come out and say, well, no one's beating the Warriors when they're at full strength, when they have their starting five?
That was funny. I used to love that. That was such a great quote. He probably still believes it, too. I don't think, you know, they obviously can't lose Steph, and I don't think they can lose Draymond.
Right. But they can probably survive other things.
They can weather and survive the others. Klay would be difficult. Iguodala would be really tough.
Yeah.
Iguodala got hurt. That would be very difficult. But I think they can weather and survive almost anything outside of those two guys.
My last thing for you, you spent a lot of time around Doc Rivers. What do you think of the job he's done, both as coach and as executive, with the Clippers so far? Like, is it up to expectations? Are they just... My problem with criticizing them is I don't think they're above criticism, but I do think we're a little hard on them because maybe we don't like the personalities or the demeanor on the court, and hey, they're in the West. Like, not everyone gets to get through the West. Sometimes it's really hard.
Yes. That's tough. As an executive, I mean, like, I don't need to pile on here.
Yeah.
They've made mistakes,
right?
A lot of them, and they've made mistakes on the margins that have led to more mistakes, and so, you know, the executive track record is not good. Now, in terms of the coaching, you know, look, if they had beaten, they've had a couple of opportunities here. They blew that series against Houston last year.
Yeah,
that was terrible. Let's say they get to a conference final and the Warriors wipe them out. Okay, at least, you know, that, you know, they would have beaten the Spurs. They would have gotten to a conference final. We'd have a different kind of take on them.
Right.
The series, and they all blend together after a while, Zach. But I think when they lost to OKC, was that? 2 years ago?
Yeah, that sounds right.
2 years ago, they could again gotten to a conference final. You know, I mean, they beat the Warriors the first year. They've won whatever it is, 50 to 58 games every year. You know, they've been good, if not great, if what somewhat disappointing in the playoffs. You know, Doc went there to win a championship. They haven't come close. So you can, you know, if you're an absolutist, you could call that a failure.
Right.
But, you know, they were not as good before he got there as they have been since he's got there.
Yeah. That's fair. Like, they – and it's – I don't know, to – maybe you can say, oh, well, it's because they got Chris Paul or whatever, but to turn the Clippers into something meaningful in a mostly positive way year after year, that's not an easy thing to do.
And they had, I mean, they had Chris Paul, and, you know, they never got out of the first round, or maybe they did. I don't remember. Like I said, they all blend together. But, you know, DeAndre Jordan became a star player with them. J.J. Redick has become way better than anybody thought he was going to be.
Right.
You know, Chris has continued to be Chris. And Blake, before he got hurt, and people are just banging on Blake right now. But before he got hurt, I mean, I thought he was a top 10 player. Some people disagree with that.
No, I Tim think that's dead on.
I love Tim. Just messing. He's great. But yeah, so I mean, you know, so all those things happened while Doc was the coach.
Yeah.
So you have to give him some credit, even, and he's easy to mock because, you know, he says things and they're funny.
He is very, I like the way he plays the media. I think he does a brilliant job of, yeah, he's really great at that.
Even when I know, I won't curse on your podcast, Zach, but even when I know he's BSing me, I still believe it.
Sure. He does, he's a good salesman. He's really good in that respect.
He really is.
Well, Paul, thank you for joining me. This has been a pleasure. I've been wanting to have you on. We can read your stuff, especially the Sunday shoot-around is like one of the best NBA things weekly.
Aww.
Around. SBNation.com. Follow you on Twitter at PFlans.
At PFlans. If I could change it, I would, but now I'm lazy enough.
Yeah, now you're too far in. And thanks for talking to me, Paul.
Anytime, Zach. Thanks.